I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's December 1st, and we have a lot to talk about. If you're living with MS, chances are that you've experienced or you are experiencing MS-related pain. And you might experience that pain in a number of different ways. There's the acute stabbing pain in your face or jaw area that's caused by damage to the trigeminal nerve. There's the painful tightening of the muscles in your arm or leg that can occur multiple times throughout the day or night. There's the infamous MS hug, that squeezing sensation around your torso that feels like someone's tightening an invisible blood pressure cuff around your chest. There's that burning or stabbing pain that can feel like an electrical current just got switched on. And there's the pins and needles that you might feel in your arm or leg. All of these commonly reported painful symptoms are examples of neuropathic pain, the pain that comes directly from the damage to nerves caused by MS. Or you could be experiencing musculoskeletal pain. Musculoskeletal pain is typically caused by an injury, like a sprained ankle or a pulled muscle. But in MS, musculoskeletal pain is caused by weakness, stiffness, or coordination problems that alter your walking. For instance, if you experience weakness in your leg, you will unconsciously alter the way that you walk to compensate for that weakness. But by altering your gait, you may end up experiencing pain in your hip or back. In the case of musculoskeletal pain, the pain doesn't come directly from MS, but from something else that MS has caused. And pain is a very personal symptom. Different people can react differently to the same pain sensation. And that only adds to the challenge of assessing and effectively managing pain. Today, we're taking a deep dive into better understanding what MS-related pain is, and we're talking about specific strategies to best manage MS-related pain with my guests, Dr. Dawn Eady and Dr. Heidi Maloney. Both of my guests are experts at assessing, treating, and managing MS-related pain, but each approaches pain from a slightly different perspective. Dr. Eady is a clinical psychologist and professor of rehabilitation medicine at UW-Madison, where she has an endowed professorship in multiple sclerosis research. Dr. Eady and her group at UW have published the results of several studies on MS-related pain in peer-reviewed medical journals. And Dr. Heidi Maloney is a nurse practitioner and the National Clinical Nursing Director for the Multiple Sclerosis Center of Excellence East at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center. Dr. Maloney heads up research programs to further the understanding of MS and its impact on veterans, while also aiding in the development of treatments to manage the disease and its symptoms. In a moment, we'll meet my guests and we'll talk about managing your MS-related pain. MS-related pain, like MS-related fatigue, is one of those symptoms that can be so distracting that it keeps you from fully engaging in every other aspect of your life. In every way imaginable, MS-related pain can really have a profound impact on quality of life. And one of the things that makes MS pain so frustrating is that it's an invisible symptom. You might look perfectly healthy, and meanwhile, you could be wrestling with this invisible 800-pound gorilla we call pain. We're talking about how to best manage MS pain with Dr. Dawn Eady, a clinical psychologist and professor of rehabilitation medicine at UW-Madison. Dr. Eady has an endowed professorship in multiple sclerosis research, and Dr. Eady and her group at UW have published the results of several studies on MS-related pain. Also joining me is Dr. Heidi Maloney, a nurse practitioner and the National Clinical Nursing Director for the Multiple Sclerosis Center of Excellence East at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center. Dr. Maloney heads up research programs to further the understanding of MS and its impact on veterans, while aiding in the development of treatments to manage the disease and its symptoms. Dr. Eady, Dr. Maloney, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here.
Great to be here, I too.
Well, Dr. Maloney, can you start us off by explaining what MS-related pain is and how it's different from other types of pain?
So you know that MS is a disease of the brain and the spinal cord and the optic nerve, and that's the central nervous system. And lesions in the central nervous system slow nerve conduction and are the cause of symptoms. And one of those symptoms happens to be pain. Pain occurs in about 50% of people that have MS. Now, for example, burning extremity pain or sharp stabbing facial pain or that tight MS hug pain can be caused by a lesion on a nerve. And people with MS can experience bone and muscle pain as well. And that's sort of the sequelae of living with MS for a period of time. When weakness in the legs or heaviness in the legs, you need to call on your back muscles to pull your legs through your gait. And ultimately, that's going to cause back pain. So, yes, MS causes pain and MS is the cause of pain.
Dr. Eady, the role of a clinical psychologist in assessing and managing pain in MS may not be apparent to some of my listeners. Can you talk about where a clinical psychologist fits when it comes to assessing and managing MS pain, and then talk about other healthcare providers who may also be part of the team to effectively manage pain?
Yeah, people often wonder why a psychologist has anything to do with pain, but we know from a wealth of scientific evidence, including modern brain imaging techniques, such as MRIs, that the brain plays a very active role in the processing of pain. Really, the brain is what's in charge of determining, you know, how much pain we feel or experience of pain. And we know that multiple regions of the brain are involved in pain processing. And interestingly, many of these same regions that really process pain signals also are involved in things in our thoughts, our emotions, and our behaviors, or what we do. So really, pain is complex. It's not just physical sensations, but it's really the culmination of a variety of areas of the brain working together to process pain and result in how you respond to pain. I often like to talk about it like it's a dial on a stereo. We know that with pain, some things turn the stereo volume up and some things turn it down. So some thoughts or behaviors or emotions can really enhance or increase the pain signal and increase pain volume. And other things such as relaxation or mindfulness can really turn it down so that we feel less pain. So all this means that pain is not just treated through one modality, through medications, although they certainly play a very important role in MS pain. It also means that non-pharmacological or psychological treatments can be helpful. And so psychologists have really been involved in the area of pain for well more than four decades in treating pain in the general population. And psychologists can really help assess how pain is impacting people, what some of those thoughts, emotions, or behaviors that may be unintentionally driving up the volume of pain, and then help to reduce pain and its negative effects through treatments. Besides psychologists, too, I like to point out it's really all about a team, especially if your pain is chronic. And so because it's so complex, multiple people should really play a role in the pain management. And certainly the person with MS living with pain is at the center of that team. But it's also helpful to have physical therapists if you're, you know, there's many things, as Dr. Maloney described, that result in changes in how people move that can be helped through physical therapy. Certainly nurses, sometimes occupational therapists, and others. So I think it's really key to think of pain as something that involves a team that centers around the person who's living with the pain.
Dr. Eady, how do you go about assessing pain?
You know, certainly I ask people about how much they hurt or their pain severity. That's that common 0 or 1 to 10 scale that we all know so well. But people with MS tell me over and over that just doesn't really capture it. And I'm much more interested in how pain impacts people's lives. So I'll ask questions about how it's affecting their mood or their fatigue, their sleep. We know that pain can result in people feeling like they are people having more memory or attention concentration problems. Pain can also disrupt people's lives in other ways, their relationships, their ability to work or to fulfill roles like parenting. You know, so there's a lot of ways that pain gets in the way. And as a psychologist, I'm very interested in learning and hearing about those firsthand, because that can often lead to ways of treating pain. Also, we know these symptoms interact. People with MS don't just have pain. Pain is just one of many symptoms. And so understanding how pain influences fatigue or their other MS symptoms is useful. And then finally, I really like to hear too firsthand, what are they doing already that helps their pain? What are they doing more of or less of that might help their pain? And really use that information to build a treatment plan.
You know, depression is another common invisible symptom of MS. And I'm wondering whether depression can have an impact on MS pain and whether MS pain can have an impact on depression. Dr. Eady?
Absolutely. We know that pain is very common in people with MS, and we know that depression is very common, and they often co-occur. Especially when people have pain, we see that oftentimes they're depressed or anxious or at least have some level of depressive symptoms. And so we also know that when we treat depression, it often can help pain get better and make pain less disruptive or improve. So, you know, it's really important to treat both and not to just treat one or the other. Having said that, I want to point out that depression alone doesn't cause pain. Pain is very real. It's something people with MS experience. But nonetheless, even though it doesn't cause it, treating it still has many benefits to the person with pain.
Dr. Maloney, how do you go about assessing pain?
So I am very interested in descriptions that patients will give me that lead me to the best treatments. So assessment is very, very important. I want to know if the pain is musculoskeletal or is it nerve pain? So asking the patient to describe their pain. Is it shooting and stabbing? Is it dull, throbbing, tingling, and aching? Is it burning? All of those descriptions are really, really very important. Patients have told me they feel like their face is crawling with ants, or they have intense itching, or ice water running down their legs as descriptors. And those are all neuropathic pain. They lead me to think that there's neuropathic pain involved. But each of those different sensations lead me to think of a different medication modality to try to use, mixed with what Dr. Eady talks about, non-medication. So yeah, the good description is really, really important. So I have people tell me what is the onset of their pain? When did it start? That's really important when it started. It's important to know where it is. Is it in the rib cage area? Is it that MS hug squeeze? Is it in your legs? Where is it and what are the characteristics of it? And I mentioned the characteristics as either stabbing or sharp and shooting. Is it stimulated? Can it be evoked? How does that pain start? And then what does the patient themselves do to relieve the pain? So these sorts of assessment questions, what do they do to make their pain feel better? Because everyone has a way of doing that. They always want to get as far away from a pain stimulus as possible. That's human nature. Do they jump in the bed and pull the covers over their head? Or do they scream and yell? I mean, what are their tactics for managing their pain? And then are they effective tactics? And the balance is trying to figure out what are the best effective tactics and what are the treatments.
Well, speaking of some of those effective tactics, Dr. Maloney, can you share some of the strategies that you might recommend to your patients to help manage their pain?
Well, strategies for managing pain are varied, and I mentioned medications. And frankly, the basic strategy for managing pain is to have a good conversation with your provider and talk about what that pain means to you and how it might interfere with your life and how it makes your life difficult to live and what it means to you. So strategies can involve medications and they can involve non-medications. Some of the non-medication strategies, I'm sure Dr. Eady will talk about, but they also involve tactile strategies such as a pressure or massage or cold or heat. Those are some of the basic strategies, but the conversation that you have with your provider needs to be ongoing and that relationship needs to be one of trust.
Dr. Eady, what are some of the interventions that you might recommend to help your patients manage their pain?
Yeah, well, so really the nice thing about non-pharmacological pain management strategies is that there's been a lot of research over the past 2 to 3 decades on managing pain. And we've learned a lot about what helps people manage pain. And that includes in people with MS. So we've done a number of studies looking at different treatments that kind of fit in these, what we call behavioral or psychological interventions. And so there are things like stress management. We know that when people are stressed, when they're reacting to situations with that fight or flight response, as if there's some danger in their lives, that is hard on the system, and the body's not meant to be in fight mode. Your muscles tense up. You have all sorts of neuroendocrine changes that can result in increases in pain, turning up that pain signal. So one way is to teach people how to decrease stress and how to manage stress. Now, stress is part of all of our lives, so we're not saying you're going to take it away, but how to manage it in ways that you don't have that physiological fight or flight response, because that's not good for pain. We also recommend a variety of strategies along this idea of relaxation or mindfulness meditation. You know, training people's bodies to calm down, to be physically relaxed, that's part of relaxation skills. And there's a lot of ways out there people can learn to do that on their own. But that's been helpful for pain. We also know that mindfulness meditation, the practice of that, helping people learning how to pay attention, to not react reflexively, but to kind of take a step back and be non-judgmental about their options, can often help people learn new ways of approaching pain management. There's also cognitive behavioral therapy, which many people with MS are familiar with because it's also helpful for sleep and depression and anxiety. But that's teaching people ways to really evaluate how they're thinking about pain and stress and their challenges, and to look for some of these very human, very automatic, but often unhelpful thoughts. As humans, we tend to focus on the negative aspects that make us feel powerless in the face of stress or pain. And cognitive behavioral therapy helps people learn ways to evaluate those kinds of thoughts and try to modify them so they're more neutral or more helpful. That often can also kind of dampen down that pain signal. And then certainly just maybe the last point is, you know, really making sure that people's depression or anxiety or sleep disturbances are treated, because if you can't sleep or you're depressed or you're anxious all the time, that's going to make your pain worse. So really making sure those are addressed.
I wanted to circle back to medications because I wanted the audience to know that there are many types of medications, and it's really important to choose the right drug for the right type of pain. And the types of medications out there for managing pain, along with what Dr. Edie has talked about, the non-medication strategies, are antidepressants, anti-epileptics, anti-inflammatories, anti-spasticity agents. I often recommend picking from each of those different categories and using them at low doses, hence getting low side effects. So low doses, low side effects, but better effect when you're using two different medications. Not every medication can be 100% effective, and side effects often limit the patient's acceptance of a medication. But I want patients to know they should hang in there when trying a new drug and resist the urge to quit that drug if it doesn't seem like it's going to make a difference in the first day of use. You know, hang in there for more than a day. It takes more than that to make sure that a drug is going to work, in a constant communication with your provider. So thanks for letting me add that.
It seems like more and more people living with MS are turning to some form of cannabis, often CBD, to manage their pain. Dr. Maloney, what can you tell us about the effectiveness of CBD for managing MS pain?
So what we know from a few clinical trials is that cannabis, which is the overarching term for both marijuana, which is THC, and CBD, which is the non-psychoactive, as that the combination 1-to-1 THC and CBD were utilized in a clinical trial of pain and spasticity, and patients had the perception that it absolutely helped their pain. Spasticity also aided in their sleep and maybe had some effect, a good effect on their bladder. So because of that, the medication nabiximols or Sativex was approved in 27 countries for pain. But you asked me about CBD directly. And CBD, there have not been any clinical trials of CBD, which is the non-psychoactive component of cannabis. There have not been any trials in MS pain. There have been some animal studies, and there has been a good study in rheumatology for knee pain, arthritis of the knee, osteoarthritis, showing that cannabis had a good effect on the osteoarthritis. Cannabis has the potential to have a good effect because it is anti-inflammatory. It's antioxidant and antioxidant qualities. And therefore, it would have potential. We just don't know because we haven't done enough clinical studies to know.
Are there risks or concerns about using CBD to manage MS pain today?
Yes, there are risks. There are risks with the side effects of the drug. Now, they're minimal. In fact, the World Health Organization has said that CBD is safe. They've also said that CBD cannot be abused. In other words, the person is not going to develop a dependence or an addiction to CBD, whereas that does happen in THC, the psychoactive component of the cannabis plant. In terms of CBD, the side effects are minimal. There are sleepiness, some nausea, sometimes vomiting, a little bit of dizziness. But the more critical thing is that CBD can increase liver enzymes. Now, many folks with MS are on other medications. Polypharmacy is fairly common in multiple sclerosis to manage other symptoms. And in fact, disease-modifying therapies that folks take to manage their multiple sclerosis, many of those disease-modifying therapies have an effect on the liver. Cannabis, CBD can be hepatotoxic, meaning it can have toxicity to the liver. So your provider needs to know you're on CBD. Why? Because if you have a kick up in liver enzymes, your provider, and he or she doesn't know you're taking CBD, may think it's due to your disease-modifying therapy and may want to change the disease-modifying therapy or change another medication or lower another medication, and that would be inappropriate. That would be keeping you from therapy that's important because you haven't disclosed everything that you're on. So that, and then the other thing about CBD is that there are interactions with 100 other drugs. Now, CBD is processed through the liver, managed through the liver, and then that has an effect on other drugs that are processed through the liver. And for instance, cladribine is a disease-modifying therapy that can be decreased in its efficacy because someone's using CBD at the same time. So that's critical. The last point I want to make is that you're not sure what you're buying when you go to an apothecary and you buy CBD. THC and CBD should be kept at low temperatures, 4 degrees centigrade. Now, that's a refrigerator, right? And it also should be kept away from light. The last time I walked into an apothecary that sells marijuana, I saw a lot of glass jars lined up on the shelf, glass jars that were receiving light. And they were open, so they weren't even particularly covered, and they weren't protected. And I don't know how long the product was in the glass jars. So there's a lot we don't know because there's no regulation of the CBD. The best thing that I've come across is that there's a label that's called Good Manufacturing Practices, and that can be stuck on the side of a product, and that kind of gives you a sense that there may be a low THC, you know, CBD has THC mixed. You can't completely make it pure. So it has some THC. It should be less than 0.3%. And you should be, that should be acknowledged by the person who's selling you the CBD at the apothecary. And the people obviously too at the apothecary are not medical providers. So they're not sure what they're selling either. And they may be pushing drugs that have a short shelf life. So you're not sure again. When they process CBD, they're using pesticides to clean it and get it out of the plant and into a formula that can be for sale. Pesticides are toxic, right? Pesticides are toxic. So other manufacturing mechanisms can prove toxic, and you don't really know what other resins and pesticides are in. I understand that CBD that's taken by mouth is only 6% bioavailable to the system. Doesn't sound like you might be getting your money's worth if you're using an oral form. Topical forms are probably best. Smoking and vape forms are definitely discouraged, you know, because of the pulmonary problems that have come with vaping. We do not want to ever suggest vaping of anything. And smoking also has toxins involved with it. So possibly the topical CBD would be the best to have.
Dr. Eady, you recently published results from a study that examined the use and impact of cannabis among people living with MS. What did you learn through your study?
Yeah, my colleagues at the University of Michigan, Dr. Tiffany Braley, Dr. Anna Krotz, and my colleague, Dr. Kevin Elschler at University of Washington, decided to do a survey of pain in people with MS, and we did it late last year in 2019 prior to the pandemic. And that study, we found that about 42% of people who in our study, and it was a very large sample, it was well over 800 people, reported that they had used some form of cannabis in the year preceding this study. And we also found that many people who had used it reported that they perceived it to have a lot of benefits for managing MS symptoms, things like their pain and their sleep and others. So I think one of our take-home points was that there's this discrepancy between what we know, because as Dr. Maloney's mentioned, there's not been a lot of studies in the benefits and risks of cannabis in people with MS for managing these symptoms, and yet it's being used in the MS community, and people perceive that it has benefits. So I think that speaks to the need to have more studies in this area so we can really have a better sense and have good clinical practices to know how to best use it to benefit people and keep them safe from any adverse effects.
Well, Dr. Heidi Maloney and Dr. Dawn Eady, I want to thank you for all you do to improve the health, well-being, and quality of life for people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/170. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think that I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop. And neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19 so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.